We're going to continue now with our discussion about the Eved Ivri. And the next issue, and I think it's the remaining issue, is with regard to the underlying reason for the phenomenon. And we're approaching it now not from the standpoint of propriety, because originally certain people felt that it was inappropriate for the Torah to give the master the permission to intrude upon the sexual life of the Eved and to give him another woman as a wife, especially when he already has a wife. So on an emotional level, these things are very difficult for most people, especially as most people, their whole attitude towards life is not based upon any kind of an abstract truth, but simply by the emotions of the society in which we live, which is rooted in a false hedonistic philosophy. We've elucidated what the true Torah idea is with regard to the attitude one should have towards the instinctual part of man, the role of the sexual, and how an intelligent person would approach these kinds of things. Now we're going to take up the problem from a different level, and that is to say that there is a halachic problem here, that under normal circumstances, there is a sexual prohibition, in effect, against relations with a shifcha, that is, with a slave, a woman, a female slave, essentially because it's part of the category of forbidden sexual relations with a Gentile. Yet here we find that there is an exception. The exception has been made in the case of the Eved. So it's interesting that the master himself, in order to increase his holding of slaves by having his female slaves have more children, he himself cannot impregnate them because he's an ordinary Jew and he's bound by the law. But he can achieve that objective through his Eved, because as far as the Eved is concerned, as long as he is an Eved, he is permitted to have relations with the Gentile woman. So these are the questions. What's the reason behind that? Why? Must be something very, very important, because in general, this is a significant prohibition. It's a significant issur. And as we mentioned, if we're going to address this question, it has to be in the right context. That is to say, this exists only in the case of the Eved who was sold by the Beis Din because he stole and could not pay back. However, in the case of one who sold himself because of poverty, this is not the case. So that's a problem, because for whatever the reason may be, there should be consistency. If the Torah removed the prohibition because of the status of being an Eved, so what difference does it make what the underlying cause was, how he became an Eved in the first place? That's one question. And the other question we had was that this is permitted only if he already has a wife. But if he doesn't have a wife when he's sold, so then the master cannot give him the shifcha. This too goes contrary to the emotions, because most people would think just the opposite. If he has a wife, so then it's wrong to do this. If he doesn't have a wife, it's not as bad. Again, that's how most people look at it from the standpoint of their emotional reactions to things. The Rambam mentions that the master can actually coerce him into this. It's not something which the Eved has choice on. So what's the idea behind it? You take a look at the Pasuk Dalad, that's 21, verse 4. If his master should give him a wife, and she bears him sons or daughters, and that's really the purpose of it. It's for the sake of having children. The woman and her children shall belong to her master. And he goes out alone. In my opinion, that's the entire purpose and justification of this phenomenon, is precisely that. That he should be given a wife, he should have a wife, and he should have children, and then they should be taken away from him. I think it's related to a very significant idea. In this very same parsha, you see later on, it talks about damages. The person inflicts physical damage on somebody else. So what is the punishment that's prescribed by the Torah? So in chapter Chaf Aleph 21, Pasuk Chaf Dalet 24, I'm sure everybody's familiar with this in terms of damages. Ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye. Shein tachas shein, tooth for a tooth. Yod tachas yod, a hand for a hand. Regel tachas rogel, a foot for a foot. And so on, any kind of wound, any kind of damages, blemishes. So it seems from reading the Torah that this is the system of punishment that's enacted upon a person. If a person physically harms someone else, so if he takes out his eye, so it would seem that he has to lose his eye, and so on and so forth. Now, this is the source of a tremendous amount of misunderstanding in the world, because people can't relate to this idea. They think that this is primitive, or that this is Old Testament, has to do with revenge, getting even. It has a negative connotation to people. And that's why, to a certain extent, that Christianity considers itself to be superior, because they believe in simply forgiveness, or turn the other cheek, or something else. So it's a complete misunderstanding of the meaning of Ayin Tachas Ayin. Anyone who studies Gemara knows that it's not to be taken literally. That's not what it means. That's why it's a perfect example and illustration of what I keep saying, that you cannot study the Torah without reference to the oral law. There's no way you can figure out what the meaning of the Torah is. It's designed and it's written in such a way that if you don't have the proper context and the proper interpretations, you can fantasize and project whatever you want onto it, but you'll have no clue as to what is actually being said. Therefore, I find absolutely no value in the study of Torah by individuals who negate the authority of the oral law and have substituted it with their own imagination. It's just imagination. You can take any other work you want and project anything you want onto it. You're not learning from the Torah. You can't learn from the Torah in that way. So it just leads to the misunderstanding and the distortion of Torah. Better not to study Torah than to distort its meaning. So anybody who studies Gemara knows that the proper interpretation is the monetary value of the limb. There was never ever a case in Jewish history where the judicial system would enact this punishment in a literal way. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai and God taught him the meaning of the Torah, he taught him the meaning of Ayin Tachas Ayin is the monetary equivalent of the eye. And it's the whole tractate in the Gemara as to how you make the evaluation or the estimate. Obviously, there's no way we can assign a value, how much is an eye worth to a person, so the Torah has certain practical measures by which you measure the value. Of course, then, the question arises, so what's the meaning of an eye for an eye? Why did the Torah write it in that way? Why didn't the Torah say it's a monetary, as the Bezdin will assess? Thereby leaving itself open to all of this misunderstanding, that there's some element of cruelty over here. That's the question that emerges. The answer is that an eye for an eye is absolutely true. That is the truth. It is to say that when a person is responsible somebody else's eye, a complete lack of any kind of a respect for the value of the other person. That's what people do in general. They diminish the pain of